We got more intelligence in a short time.
That's incredible.
Which was,
how did it feel to be in command for the first time? I mean, commanding your
battalion. Oh, great. That's what you're for.
That's what it's all about, eh?
Yeah.
And you met no opposition, I gather. Or very little.
Very little. What I suppose you'd call a few mafia types who shooting, not very much.
Well, I would call it war, what you would call.
Well, it wasn't nothing.
Now, were you involved with Bull Force at all after this?
With which?
Bull Force? Bull Force? Or X Force? Book to be.
X Force.
Well, let's take a look at that. This would be map number 8 in Nicholson's book. You see. Turn around and see what's going on. We see Bull Force coming up. Now this is Lockery. Now X Force comes up with the Royal Canadian Regiment. We see Eddies.
Mm.
And they're both moving up Calaberry. And there's another one called Bull Force up here. You see, this is later in September. The PPCLI seems to be at the end of this Bull Force operation. Right here.
Okay. Who was Bull Force? Obviously, yes, I suppose. I remember these places, Atella, Leonel, Melfing, or...
Well,
Beauforce is a name means nothing to me at this point in time.
Okay.
I suppose it did then, because obviously we were part of it. It was just your brigade, I suppose.
Just brigade. Now, you met with little opposition all the way up the bottom end here, I guess.
Yeah,
the toe of the boot and the
terrible.
Heel. It's not quite the heel, but...
Not really awful.
The ankle, I guess.
Not really awfully serious. A lot of hard going, though. Say
the
that much for
it. Very difficult, is that correct?
Well, it's all... Mm-hmm.
Lots of rivers, mountains, across. When we come to October...
It's real narrow here. That's the thing I showed you in the clipping. It was the first sort of real atrocity we'd run into, and they did, in fact... I remember you said, is this propaganda? It was a story written in the books of my father's by poor old Greg Clark, who is now dead, and... Greg was with me, and we took this village. It was not very much opposition, but they had, in fact, taken all the males and just lined them up against the wall and shot them. So there were actually a lot of very tearful Italian women about.
What was your reaction when you got into this?
Well, we didn't like Germans very much, and.
Only confirmed your beliefs.
Yeah, but it's the first real sort of atrocity thing that we'd seen, where they lined them up, I suppose, mm-hmm. and general principles, but every male in the village was done away with. I mean, there was that sort of thing used to go on during this thing.
One has to wonder sometimes. When we hit October 23, 1943, the PBCLI attacked Spinetti. And you do a daylight crossing of the Biferno River, and you're exposed, and you use mules, according to...
Well, we had... that was our main form of transport up the mountains, you see.
Mules?
Yeah. You seize mules from the Italians, natives, which was rather hard on them, too, I must admit. Also, it was quite interesting seeing who in the battalion were mule skinners. You can produce everything out of a battalion, right? But it was the mules that carried all your rations and ammunition and all through there. And, And the scout and sniper platoon. We had horses too.
Awful too, though, ain't it?
We had horses too.
Well, This is modern warfare.
Had a little cavalry platoon, but these mountains are mountains. It's, mountain fighting is very difficult, but on the other hand, there's a certain amount of security in mountains. You know, if you're on a plane, well, you can be overlooked in the mountains, and you can be the subject of some very heavy artillery and unpleasantries and things. Whereas there's a certain amount of safety in mountains, and it's much more inconvenient.
So you're almost alpine troops, I guess, would be the
At that correct. Point, going up that part, it was mostly mule transport. And in fact, we kept mules pretty well all through Italy.
And mule skinners appeared.
Oh, yeah, great ones. One of them's a retired Army major here in Victoria. He was the last corporal at that time, and nobody knew he knew anything about mules, but he turned out to know a great deal. So we trained the mule skinners, and the mules, they were...
As you, marched your way up the spine?
As you went up the spine, no, that was...
Opposition, again, very light, is that correct?
Hairs.
Is opposition picking up now, or is it...
It was picking up, but I mean, it wasn't. I say no great deal. You weren't having people killed right and left.
Mm-hmm.
There's an awful lot of nuisance attacks, and you get held up, and if you're in a narrow mountain pass and so on, and you go around it, and that's how you get it. By the time you get around it, and I mean, the German object, of course, was to gain time. And
delaying action is never withdrawing. Were you getting many German prisoners? I gather you were getting a lot of Italians all along, is that correct?
Only Italians, they were out by that time.
They were just completely out.
Yeah.
But were you getting many Germans at this time, or
no.
You weren't seeing them?
No. You were seeing them, but you weren't capturing many.
What about your intelligence this time? Was it very good, very bad? Did they let you know what was happening up ahead? I mean, today we read about Intrepid and Ultimate Secret and all these wonderful things. Now, were you aware of any of this kind of nonsense? Or?
We certainly weren't aware of Ultra Secret or anything. We did our own, as I say. Once,
but were reports coming in saying that you were going to take on the face of the paratroop division or the, you know, SS Grenadiers?
Oh, yeah, you knew who you were up against. That
did you ever question the how accurate this information was? Somebody's getting the information somewhere, or just didn't think about it?
Well, an awful lot of it came from your own intelligence people, and an awful lot came from Italians, of course.
You were getting spoon-fed from the great intelligence network set up in England, in other words?
Not that we knew of.
Not that you knew of.
I don't think Montgomery would have admitted it if he had been.
Yeah. Speaking of the devil, did you ever meet up with Monty and Patton and who else was there? Mark Clark there? Sure, he was there. And Alexander was there for a bit, wasn't he?
Alexander, but he was a friend of sorts after the war.
Did you meet up?
Met him once there.
Did you meet up with any of these other fellows there?
Monty, the first time I... saw Monty was when he became commander in chief, Southeastern Command in England, and we came under his command, and he saw all officers,
mm-hmm.
certainly all COs and company commanders, and on the basis of that, the odd CO disappeared in England, and quite a few company commanders, and from the on the basis of a rather short interview with Monty. Generally speaking, he was right, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had such a reputation, and there was certainly no nonsense with him. I rather enjoyed my 20 minutes with Monty. He extracted more out of me than 20 minutes than most people could extract in about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got your philosophy, he knew what you felt about troops, what your training was.
Mm-hmm.
He gave you the work in 20 minutes.
What was the impression, though, of Montgomery? And I'm thinking, by you and your colleagues, then, would you look up at him as an invincible leader, or was he just
Well, he came fresh from the desert, and 8th Army and so on, and we thought joining the 8th Army was the greatest thing in the world, of course. And the first time we saw him was in Sicily, when he appeared really towards the middle of the campaign, towards the later part. But I remember the first time we seen him, we were all gathered in this great dust bowl of an arena, a valley, and Monty came in this famous Humber of his, flag flying and standing up, fly switch, and gathered around me, and we all gathered around and heard the pearls of wisdom, and and it was a very impressive moment. And I think as a commander, I think Monty, you had complete and utter faith in him.
When you look back, though, it doesn't seem ludicrous at all or ridiculous, or is there a certain amount of amusement? I mean,
no, you were never amused with Monty. He doesn't amuse himself or other people very easily. Same with Guy Simmons. I mean, Chris Folks, who can be amused by at times, various others, but Monty was a very cold, austere character, and you had utmost confidence, as long as you weren't part of his cover plan. If you were part of the cover plan, well, and you happened to judge that was so, you might have been in trouble, because...
I guess what I'm getting at is today, I think of, say, someone important... take, for example, when Prince Philip came out here last year. I'm sure there were a lot of people sort of sitting around snickering, thinking, oh, there's the prince, big deal, sort of an attitude. I personally think it is a big deal, but... I guess what I'm getting at is, were there people around, like after Monty would come, would they all sort of snicker about his antics and everything else after he had left? I don't think anyone would snicker to his face, but after he'd gone.
Oh, no, I mean, when you say amusement, I suppose we were all amused at sort of the no smoking, no coughing, and so on. If he was giving you a lecture in a theater, he would say, you now have 2 minutes to cough. And after that, there will be no coughing. And in fact, there wasn't.
There was no coughing.
There was no coughing.
I see.
But it's funny you mention Monty like that, because I remember that first time so clearly. And as I say, we just had utmost confidence in him. I think this ran through the whole.
That's what I'm after.
Ran through the whole thing. And
that's true.
And I saw him various times after that, after the war. But I was rather sad at the last time he came out as Deputy Secretary of NATO on his retirement swing through Canada, and he appeared in Ottawa. We were all Army Headquarters, which is a very large organization even then, not as large as it is now, but it was much too large then. We were all gathered in that theater, and Monty appeared, and the old magic had gone. He still said the sort of 2 minutes cough and sort of thing, no smoking, and he was trying hard to be the old commander in chief in the field, and it had just gone. I can't explain it yet, and it was just sort of terrible feeling of disappointment and sort of sadness.
That he was still going through the same thing.
He was going through it. Yeah. He'd been the center of a good deal of controversy in NATO, of course. And he's been rather nasty about Eisenhower.
Did you know of any confrontations between, like, say, close confrontations between, say, Patton and Montgomery in Italy, and then, of course, the major one with Montgomery and Eisenhower, of course. But did you know if there was any dissension with Montgomery, the leader?
We wouldn't find out at our level at all, Chris, if there was.
You're commanding a battalion now. I mean, you're a regimental commander. You're a lieutenant colonel. That's not high enough to find out what's going on at that level, eh? Word wouldn't filter down?
Well, I think the only thing that filtered down was that we didn't have the faith in Clark or Patton wasn't there. Or maybe he was, I don't know. We didn't have the faith in Mark Clark. And we knew there was friction there, but you felt as long as you had Montgomery, you were all right, and you trusted that he was.
What about the Canadian generals there and their responsibility? Was there any friction that you were aware of?
No, not the slightest. As long as I had Guy Simmons, didn't any friction with any of his subordinates, they'd go.
Well, he sort of came in with a broom, didn't he?
Well, he would not put up with any person that wasn't prepared to serve him completely, loyally and everything else. You might love him dearly, but you recognize that he was a good commander. A lot of people, of course, that's not everybody's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't think Simmons was greatly overrated. I don't happen to think so. I think he's underrated, if anything.
Is that right?
It's just a pity that he didn't write his book. There's no way of getting that now, and I don't imagine he probably, like General Perks, he probably didn't leave many papers.
Yes.
Although he was going to write his book for the, I think his son may be doing something about it. Has Reg ever mentioned it? Or?
No, not to me. No. We could ask him later. All the way up through Italy here, there's major. Now, you're, when we get to the Moro River, you're awarded the DSO.
Yeah.
Do you recall anything about that, sir?
Well, the Moro was a very good little battle. It was the usual Italian river, not that much water in it, and fairly swiftly flowing, but way down and massive cliffs on the other side, and Villa Rigatti, the village we took, was another one of the mountain villages perched on top, with the very level ground leading into it from the west. But the way we had to go at it, it was a brigade attack, and the sea force were on the right on this San Vito, I think it was.
This would be December
43,
the
Moro.
That's not the right map.
No, that's not the right map. Howard, I mean, it was.
What were the difficulties, do you recall, in crossing the Moro? Now, you were awarded the DSO. What I'm getting at, sir, is how did you distinguish yourself in the eyes of others?
Well, it was first. I'll tell you, it was a very difficult operation, and if it had been successful, there would have never been any Ortona, because we had them outflanked. And they say the sea force attacked on the right, and they were sort of flung back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that ended that, and we got across where we were and got Rogatti, which all the roads leading into Ortona, you control all those from there, and it was a...
Well, the German opposition would be coming now, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, well, this is...
Getting December.
What
about the weather? We got the mud bowls and things coming now?
Yeah, it was getting cold.
It was getting cold?
Cold.
Had the rain come, or is that...
It was muddy. There was a good deal of rain and cold. It wasn't terribly comfortable weather. But
wouldn't affect the infantry, I guess, as much as the transport and things, am I correct?
We didn't have much transport. Keith Corbo, commanding the 3rd PDC line, I think they got 200 and something vehicles. We had 29. So it was quite a difference that way.
Whole different ballgame. Mm.
But this was a night attack. It was a silent attack at night, and we formed up on our side of the river, and we'd had... Speaking of intelligence, we had a very good scout and sniper platoon, and these kids had been sneaking over there in the night and lying up in the village in the middle of the Germans and getting all the information we wanted, so we knew pretty well exactly where German companies were and
mm-hmm.
what they were doing, and it was pretty well... It was a pretty skilled operation that way, and we knew exactly what we were doing. And there was a long, slippery climb down up the river. It was in the middle of the night.
Now, how did you cross the river itself?
Walked. It was all right.
Walked through the river.
All you did was get wet. But it was all right that way. And that was the whole key to it, of course. We had British tanks with us. And they couldn't go in the dark, of course, and get down there. It was a terrible thing. I mean, there were no roads down or anything. Just, I don't know how the tanks got down yet. And how they got up is even more of a mystery, practically. Except the tanks, I mean, we'd all been out on the thing and gazing at it and walking over it at night. And there was a lot of desultory firing and with patrols and things beforehand, but that night we just we in fact crept up into the thing and got the whole battalion inside the town, got Germans, took about 120 prisoners and killed another 100 and
fierce fighting.
Well, it was they were so surprised because there was no indication, everything had been so quiet. And so it was really a matter of
stealth.
We knew where the houses were, and we knew where they were, and
due to your intelligent people that were up ahead.
Yeah. So there were a very surprised lot of Germans. And,
did you call the name of the town itself? Where you were?
Rogatti.
Villa
Rogatti, R-O-G-A-T-T-I. So we caught them pretty well, and then...
What troops were up against German troops? Do you recall the...
They were the 90th Parachute Regiment.
Well, they were crack. They were parachutes were crack.
Yeah, they were good troops.
They were good Germans. So
I met a fellow. We stayed in a motel outside Guelph a few years ago, and there was a German running up. And I said, "How long have you been out here?" And he said, "Oh, 20 years." So I said, "Oh, you must have been in the army." And I said, "Well, What regiment was it?" He said, "I'm a paratrooper." Ideas? We were in Mogadi together? we were on Vino Ridge together? So we had quite a jolly time, the motel owner.
Swapping lies or comparing notes?
Comparing notes. It was very interesting. And we had got some of their papers later reporting on the battle. God knows where they are now. But, as I say, it was a very successful operation that way, and when daylight came, we were well ensconced in the thing, and they counterattacked. Probably the first one, I suppose, probably two companies and a squad in the tanks, and it was well, the poor wretches, some of them. I mean, we were very well sighted, and I remember in a house, and it was on the second story, and there was trees and a hedgerow running right behind the poor wretched Germans forming up for their counterattack directly in front of the window here. And I mean, it was just sort of everybody let loose all at once. The poor wretches, they were all just getting ready to do their counterattack and forming up, and of course not looking at the at their flanks whatsoever, and there were all sorts of things like that. And then we had great trouble because our tanks had such a hard time getting up. We needed tank support greatly, mm-hmm. but they arrived just before the counterattack, and we got them into position, and they were absolutely magnificent. They let German tanks come in probably 100 yards less before they opened fire. They were all camouflaged, and so we knocked out every German tank. And,
using Piat bombs as well?
Well, the tanks were, we were using Piats. I don't know, they weren't terribly satisfactory.
They didn't find them satisfactory.
No, I mean, they weren't a great anti-tank weapon.
No.
But they did knock, the main destruction or destroyer of tanks were our own tanks. And with great discipline holding fire, because there's often a tendency to shoot a little too soon.
Mm-hmm.
But these types walk right into it. And, so that was that. But then we...
Do you think it was just hastily planned, poorly planned on the Germans' part? Because usually they're planning...
No, they overran a leading platoon of ours. And, it was well planned, but it was... unfortunate execution in the forming up in some parts, but they overran a platoon of ours. It was a very dicey situation for a while. I mean, Mm-hmm. You have tanks coming in on you and a great mass of artillery and mortars and so on. You know, it's rather difficult to figure out what the hell's happening all the time. And our A Company, Major Watson, or Colonel Watson, he was commanding A Company, and they were the ones that sort of bore the brunt of the first attack and had their leading platoon overrun. And the platoon commander is a very successful industrialist in England now. He was taken prisoner. He was also Golden Gloves heavyweight champion. But he was taken prisoner there, and a good many in the platoon. We had a few casualties in that line, but our casualties were nothing compared to German ones, really. But A Company was that company, I say, it was in a very dicey position with one platoon overrun. And
where would you be? Would you be up in the thick of things as usual, or were you back a little bit to
maintaining headquarters? I was 100 yards from A Company, and then we were all very tight in this village. Yeah.
Now, how about communications? You knew what was going on instantaneous, or because you were so close?
Usual thing you do, you go over to the company, and and it was quite easy under these circumstances, except there were a lot of stuff lying around. but your best means of communication and a thing like that is to go and be with the company commander and see what the hell's happening. Yes, but it was a rather simple matter there. You just had a certain amount of running to do.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like Korea, where you'd have to run about 2,000 yards to a company. This was all tight in.
Mm-hmm.
But that one ended satisfactorily, and we were actually quite pleased with ourselves. And we had masses of German supplies and food, equipment, everything. I mean, got the works. I never got a thing out. And that was the end of that phase. And we dug in and got ready for another counterattack, and our tanks in the first counterattack were just running out of ammunition when another tank loaded with ammunition got up to them. So we were lucky that way.
Which tanks were they? Those be British tanks?
Yeah, they were British.
No troubles that way. Cooperation between tanks and
No, we worked a lot with British tanks. They weren't always the same ones.
No.
And if you were told you were going to be supported by the Three Rivers, on occasion you found that you were being supported by the 44th Royal Tank Corps.
What was the reason for that?
The next day.
Did that ever bother you?
It used to bother us greatly. If you, for the Hitler line, for example, we rehearsed with, I guess it was Calgary tanks. We rehearsed with them, and the night before they were to go off somewhere else, and we were with British tanks. North
Irish
Horse.
Did you ever question why?
North Irish Horse? Mm-hmm. Damn right we did.
What'd they say?
Urgently required somewhere else.
Didn't it seem odd that every time?
Nothing we could do. Well, no. It wasn't every time, but I mean it happened. Well, of course, war is not a very...
The Armored fought very seldom with the tank. The Calgary's, the Ontario's, and the Three Rivers. Mm-hmm. Didn't spend very much time at all with the Canadian troops, other than Ortona.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering if you had any explanation for it. Any theories on it?
No, I think our theory on it was that, we were a lot closer together than you'd think now, probably. See, I mean, we were all friends of the North Irish Horse, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Their squadron commander used to wear a PBCI flash and they had a maple leaf on their tanks. So we were all close together that way, and really we knew the Calgary as well, we knew the Three Rivers as well. It was.
I guess what I'm getting at.
I think we really thought it was all one sort of great pot. We were bloody irritated when you were told you were going to have somebody and somebody else turned up.
Mm-hmm.
And this did happen on probably too many occasions.
I had heard.
But when it happened, you were usually too busy to worry much about it, except to get on with
with the job at hand.
Getting.
I had heard that there was dispute between the brigadier, I guess, the brigade commander of the 1st Canadian Armored and the Canadian, I guess, divisional commanders.
He was a very prickly guy. Terrible thing to say about him. Now he's dead.
Who would this be?
Lyman.
Lyman.
Oh, yes, that was quite true.
So it was easier
I don't know whether that was the reason or not. But.
No, I just wondered because you were in the position itself. Well, how did you spend Christmas of 1943?
I might just finish off regarding because it was the second counterattack was a real desperation effort, and again great strength and more tanks and we were damn lucky. We got ammunition up and we sort of finished the job off, and the idea was that the Edmonton Regiment would come through us that night. We were hooped and Jefferson and Edmonton and Seattle came up and they were going to go through us, and then they had, and if they had, well, of course, their Ortona was outflanked and there was nothing there. We'd have been.
Ortona.
We'd have been in Ortona the next day, or the day after. And
what was the problem there?
The problem was that the Canadians said they couldn't build a bridge to get tanks, transport, and so on over. To exploit to this. Yeah, it's I don't know.
They were slamming Bailey bridges on tanks across rivers up and down Italy. The Canadians.
That's right. Well, that's I'm a great friend of mine who's the chief engineer. Nameless, he said this is an impossible place to put a bridge. So they couldn't build a bridge over this damn river at this point to go through. So in the end, exploitation was canceled, and the 4th Indian Division came up and built a bridge and called it the Impossible Bridge. a great huge sign over it, but that was highly unfortunate. The Edmontons did not go through us. The Edmontons were taken back, the Sea Force, and
so
were back behind there. And
exploiting your initiative.
So we were a couple of days later. We were taken out of there, and we got off on a whole new thing with the crossroads and so on. Battle need never have happened, and on the other hand, Paul Cheek got a VC.
Not need to happen.